The job for people like me and people who want to bring about political discourse is to get someone who only cares about gas to care about a lot more. They have to care about democracy. They have to care about corruption. They have to care about a lot more things.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Brown Girl Podcast. One quick reminder before we get into today's episode, we did start an email newsletter earlier this month that we send out every other week. It's been a fun way to engage with listeners on a more personal level on things outside podcast episodes. So if you are interested in joining, check out the show notes to subscribe. I know last time I got a note that some of you had issues clicking the link, but it should be working now. I think the hyperlinks only work if you're using an app and not a browser for some reason. I don't know why that is. So with that being said, for today's episode, we are talking to Matt George. Matt runs the parody account at Malu Trump, which is a satirical account where he basically impersonates Donald Trump in Malayalam.
Namaskaram. Enikinim korchu karyangal parayanunde. Fake news media.
And it is seriously one of the most hilarious accounts I follow. So many of you, if you don't come from a Malu background, you may not be familiar with him, but I definitely encourage you to stick around. It was a really fun conversation, just kind of hearing from the perspective of someone who creates this type of comedy content online and uses that as a platform to engage with the community and create dialogue around various social and political issues that impact all of us. So we talked about what drove him to start the account, some of the cool opportunities and things that have come from it, how he's dealt with some of the negativity and trolling that surfaced from time to time, as well as things that he wants to do differently going forward on the platform. And then we also pivot the conversation toward the end and just talked about life and dating and relationship deal breakers and just some other fun chit chat. So be sure to stick around to the end. Also, as a side note, in case anyone's wondering, we're not related. I know we have the same last name, but most Malu people that you meet pretty much all have the same 6 or 7 last name. So yeah, that's it. Here's Matt. Enjoy. Says the mic is the CM Tech.
Perfect. That's the one.
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. I'm really happy to be doing this today. We have a handful of fan-submitted questions that we'll get to. But before we dive into that, tell us your background, because we all know Malu Trump, but we don't know Matt George. Like, I literally did not even know your name was Matt George until we hopped on that Zoom call a couple of weeks ago. So tell us your background. Like, I know you have a really unique childhood between moving countries and boarding school and things like that. So take us way back.
So I'm going to be real with you. That is the most difficult question that I have to answer in interviews. The moment somebody asks me to tell me about myself, I forget everything. I don't remember. I'll do my best. Yeah. So a lot of people don't know this about me, but I actually spent an enormous part of my life living in India. I spent 11 years there, the last 6 of which was at a British boarding school. And I only came back to the U.S. for high school, and I've been in the U.S. ever since. I did my education out in Boston. I was studying there and I had my first gig post-graduation in Wisconsin, actually, in the middle of nowhere. It was one of the craziest decisions that I had to do as a 21, 22-year-old. I wanted to live independently. I knew that if I stayed in New York, my parents would want me to live with them. And I just wanted to be free. I wanted to live life by myself and just gain some independence that way. I worked in consulting for a bit, and then I moved into like a marketing capacity, which brought me back to New York City, where I've been in the startup world for like 4 years at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was during that time that the pandemic hit and I was in Brooklyn, and I'm like, oh, why am I paying all this rent? I might as well move back home with my parents, who lived in Long Island at the time, really close to where I was at. So, and then weirdly, Julie, everything feels like it blended together from there. Like the pandemic 2 years just blends together. And 3 months ago, I moved to Dallas, Texas, which is where I'm at right now.
Okay. So a couple of clarifying questions. Were you born in the U.S.? Because you said you moved back to India. So where were you born? And then what age did you move back to India?
So I was born in the U.S., actually. I was born in New York City. But at the age of four, my parents moved me to India. I didn't have a choice in the matter. I was four. And I came back when I was 15. So
got it. And what was boarding school like?
So if you asked me at the time, I would have said, I hate it. This is the worst experience. There are so many rules. They don't feed us right. But, you know, looking at things in hindsight, it was actually an incredible experience. They taught us to be fiercely independent. So there were a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, but you bonded really well with all the students that you were like dormed with. I got exposed to an international culture from a young age, even though I was in India, which helped my move to America. It was super easy. I didn't struggle. You know, there was a culture shock for me. The closest thing to culture shock was people started spelling words, C-O-L-O-R. They missed something. That was like the biggest culture shock that I experienced.
Yeah. So boarding school, it's like college, right? You're living in the dorms, you're going to classes, but you're still a kid. It sounds like you had more rules, perhaps.
So many more rules. And yes, and we had boarding school, we had dorm parents. And I'll never forget this. I was dropped off when I was 8 years old.
Okay.
So, you know, my mom and dad were there and I didn't really understand what was happening. I was eight. I wasn't paying attention to stuff. And then, you know, I see this other couple there, you know, nice looking couple, whatever. And I'm like, who are these people? And my mom's like, we're going to go now. And I'm like, I don't want you to go. Like, and they looked at the two people. And they're like, these are going to be your parents now. And I remember crying, being so upset. I'm like, no, but I want my real parents. So that was my like introduction to boarding school. I felt homesick in the first 5 seconds.
Oh my God. Yeah, of course. At 8 years old. How are you so fluent in Malayalam? Is that just from your years of living in India or do you speak it regularly now when you're at home with your family?
No, I think it's because I've been in India during vacation. We would go back to Kerala and we would have more opportunities to speak our language there. A lot more than what if you were here. I think that's an accurate thing to say.
Yeah, for sure. So you're born in New York, you moved back to India, you came back to New York, you went to school in Boston, then you moved to Wisconsin. How long was your stint in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin's stint was 10 months.
Okay, so
like
short.
11 months. And at maybe the 7 to 8 month mark, I'm like, I'm so sick of this. Like, I don't like this work. And then I started really paying attention to essentially the Trump presidency. And saw just how well he wielded social media and marketing and all of those tools. And I realized just how much influence all of these platforms had. And that's what really piqued my curiosity into like the digital marketing world. So then I started really exploring that in my last 3 months in the job. I'm like, you know, I would go to work and come home. I would like learn different technologies. I would learn about Facebook marketing, Google marketing, what is affiliate marketing? I would learn about all these marketing related things. And I'm like, this is really cool. I actually would much rather be learning about this than help a billion-dollar company implement software at a hospital. Like that's what I was doing. I don't do that anymore. So yeah.
So what do you do for work right now? I know you mentioned you're in the startup space. Are you still in the startup space? And what exactly do you do?
I'm still in the startup space. So I run growth for a crypto startup. I know it's a weird time to be mentioning crypto right now because weirdly, you know, when I mentioned this a year ago, people would be like, oh, cool, this crypto's pretty cool. Give me advice on Solana. Give me advice on X, Y, Z. And I'd be like, yeah, cool. Here's how it works. And now when I mentioned it, there's like, I can feel the tensions rising. I can feel them being like thinking, oh, it's all a scam. If it's not a scam. So, we're a company that's registered with the SEC, one of the few. That is a credential that doesn't really exist in the crypto world. So I'd like to say that I definitely work for a legitimate crypto company. We're not defrauding anybody. It's sad that I even have to have these disclosures, but our marketing, we're a 14-person team, really small. I work really well in smaller teams. That is what I've learned.
Are you fully remote now?
I'm fully remote. So that is like one of the biggest positives from my perspective for this whole pandemic. It forced the culture of tech has to, you know, be extremely flexible with remote work now. I don't ever plan on working in person, or at least working for a company that forces in person. I want the option of having a 100% remote. I want an option.
Yeah. It's funny. So I'm in the same boat. I'm 100% remote too. And I would never go back to a job that required me to come into the office. I do think it's nice to have the option. Like I live in Austin. Texas, and my company doesn't have an office here, but if they did, I know I would love the option to be, or like, I love the idea of being able to go in like once or twice a week, but I don't want that to be like a mandatory thing. But the funny thing is, before the pandemic, I thought I would never enjoy working from home. And now I'm like, I would never go back.
Yeah, no, I feel that.
Yeah. Okay. One last question before we get into the fan submitted questions. How do you like living in Dallas?
I just moved here 3.5 months. So I'm pretty fresh off the New York boat. I like my people, which is also your people, we're not built for cold weather. So, moving away from the Northeast, I don't like the cold. So it's really nice. I was outside today on the phone with a friend in Boston, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm enjoying this warm weather. Yeah. I can be out there, like, it's too cold. I can't deal with it. So it's definitely slower paced than New York City. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that when I was living in New York. They're like, oh, you know, down south, it's a lot, you know, slower paced down there. And I feel that. I've been to several events. I've explored some amount of the nightlife here, and there is a significant difference in the energy levels in both places. But I'm not going to complain or cry about that. I think I've reached a stage in my life where I'm happy with the calm. Like, I'm okay with this. This is nice. I like the suburbs.
For sure. So now that we know a little bit about who you are, let's dive into some of the Trump or Mulu Trump fan questions. So I had posted a little Instagram story the other day just with some mutual connections to see what people wanted to hear from you. So I tried to put this in somewhat of a sequential order, but let's start off with the basics. So how did you come up with the concept of this Mulu Trump character? Like, where and how did this start?
So Trump won the election in 2016. He entered the White House in 2017. And ever since he entered office, at this point in my life, I was consuming a ton of political satire, The Daily Show mainly, and then, you know, Colbert's program, The Late Night Night Show, whatever the heck it's called. And one thing I noticed about all these political satirists is that they would mock Trump. You know, they all did the same exact caricature of him. And I just kept hearing this over and over. Seth Meyers, name, if you Google any political satirist, say Trump impression, you will see one. It became that popular. So I think at some point, I subconsciously just decided to start mimicking it. So I started doing it in English, and then I started perfecting it. And then I would like whip it out in front of family and friends just to make them laugh. Yeah. And it was a funny thing. It was like, you know, I would do this for a couple of years, obviously 2017 until 2020. 2020 rolls around, and I'm at the dining table with my brother. We're waiting for food. And I can't speak behind why I did what I did, but I was hungry. And Malayalis, what do they say when they're hungry? They say, "Eniki veshikunu." But for some reason, my brain decided to say, "Eniki veshikunu." I did that. I just did it. And my brother looked at me. He burst out laughing. He's like, "What? Was that a Malayali Trump?" I'm like, yes, it was. And then I stopped because I was freaked out that I did that. We ate food. I didn't talk about it. And then I started marinating and thinking about it more. I'm like, this is a funny little thing to really make some content around. But that was the origin of how that started.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your videos have become quite a spectacle within our Malayali community. Like, I've seen your videos circulating on WhatsApp groups and things like that. So what compelled you to actually like hit upload on that first video? Because I think recording something in your own home is very different than like hitting upload. So what was kind of going on in your head when you first publicly shared that first video?
I think in my head, so I am someone who is not, like, personally, I don't feel any sort of trepidation with being out in the public. I've always known that, like, public settings, I'm more than content with being the loud one, you know, embarrassing people, like, jokingly. Like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with taking the heat. I have a pretty thick skin. And I genuinely just thought it would be a funny thing to post and share. And it was more so curious. I'm like, I think this is funny. My family thinks this is funny. Yeah. I wonder if other Malayalis will think this is funny too.
Right.
So my motivation was purely to just make people laugh. That was it. I just thought it was a funny thing.
Okay, so it just started off as like one funny video, and then it just kind of took off from there.
There was no plan. Like, I didn't make a second video up until like 2 months later or 3 months okay. later. There was no plan. I was like, I was just watching everything happen in real time. I was like, huh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Okay. So it just kind of happened. This wasn't like, you know, where you had intentionally wanted to create this platform. It just kind of happened. Got it.
It was a one-off thing. And then I was like, huh, I guess I should keep going. And it helped that this was coinciding perfectly with the election. You know, it was an election year and tensions were high. Conversations surrounding the candidates was incredibly high. Trump was more active than he had ever been throughout his first term.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, some pieces did fall into place. I do have to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this next question was two parts. I'm going to break it up. The first part was when you debuted as Malu Trump. So obviously this is a satire account, right? So how did Republicans in our community react to the satire? Was it well received?
That's a good question. And I think that for a while, nobody, liberal or conservative, nobody knew what my affiliation was. They had no idea. You know, you couldn't tell. And I know this because I've talked to people and I've heard it from both sides of the aisle that they thought I was the other side. Or they thought I was, you know, Republican. They thought I was Democrat. Like, they had no idea. It was so ambiguous. It only became clear once I started posting some stories, you know, sharing viewpoints, personal viewpoints, and sharing some news and just perspectives on that. Then it became extremely clear, like, where my leanings were. So I think at first people were neutral and they're happy to be neutral. They liked it. But as time passed, Republicans, a lot of them did not take too kindly to it, especially in the Malay community. I became privy to some screenshots that occurred in a Republican group chat on WhatsApp for Malayali people. And let's just say that they were saying some really nasty things about it. It was so awful. And the sad part of it was, the really sad part was that these were grown men and grown women. You know, they were like in their 40s and 50s saying these really, really awful things about me personally. And I was like reading these screenshots. I wasn't upset about it. I was just like, this is unfortunate, because I know that these people will have no issue going to church the next day and preaching love of God, preaching kindness, preaching gentleness. But behind a closed WhatsApp group chat, I'm seeing some really nasty things.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How did that impact your psyche? Like, because I feel like for a lot of people, I mean, you can see dozens and dozens of amazing feedback, validating feedback, and then you see that one shitty comment or that one shitty message, and it can really, really mess with your head. Like, I know I've experienced that. So how did that make you feel, like, you know, seeing these screenshots of people saying these things about you on a personal level?
I was surprisingly okay with it. And I think it's because I knew that I had, you know, the support outweighed the hate for me personally. I think if I ever reached an inflection point where it was the other way around, it would affect my psyche. But because it didn't, I quite literally laughed at it.
Yeah.
I was sad at the fact that, you know, grown people were the ones who were saying these sorts of things behind closed doors. But I wasn't upset at it. Like, I do have a pretty thick skin for the most part. I'm okay with, you know, I'm okay. I can take the heat.
Yeah. So I mentioned you were talking about WhatsApp messages. I've been forwarded WhatsApp messages, but there have been a handful of times where I'm like, I'm pretty sure this uncle that's sending this does not realize that this is actually an account that's like poking fun at Donald Trump.
Right. Oh yeah, I've received that before. I made a video which was very heavily, it was very layered with satire and sarcasm that someone didn't realize. They're like, oh, Monet, like, good, you are doing the right thing, Monet. And then I'm like, this is kind of awkward, but
right.
Finish watching the video first. And then, yeah. So I've had that. I actually, I can't name the county, but after I made my recent video, I had the Republican chairman of a county in Dallas reach out to me personally saying, wow, this is awesome. Great work. And I'm just like, and he's Malayali. I'm like, he has no idea. He just saw this video. He thinks I'm being serious and he has absolutely no idea. He's the chairman. A part of me wants to just engage and just be like, yo, we should meet up. Let's hang and just, you know, see how far I can take it before he realizes. I like messing with people like that, just harmlessly.
Yeah.
People just cannot tell sometimes.
Yeah. What are some things that you want to do differently this time around? So obviously we all know Donald Trump is going to run again in 2024. So that means we're going to see more Mulu Trump content. So what do you think you want to do differently this time around as far as how you want to engage on the platform?
So one of the things that I did a lot during, you know, 2020 was I got extremely political. I became very, I started facilitating a lot of conversations. I, you know, had a lot of my viewpoints out there. And one of the things that I did, something that I do, you know, to be frank, that I do regret, I was pretty divisive, I think. I think I was very ferocious in the way I communicated my viewpoint. And I dismissed a lot of people who didn't really align with the way that I thought that they should align.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples that you can think of?
I know that I have DMs. I have so many DMs from people who dissent with the viewpoint that I'm like trying to perpetuate or facilitate, that I'm promoting. They're like, well, actually, no, we don't agree with this. And here's why. And I would try to address like the lion's share of that. But I think I addressed it in a condescending way a lot of the time. I think that's what I did. And I think I did alienate a lot of people by doing that. I on one hand, I made a certain group of people feel great by validating points. They loved it. But then on the same hand, I'm condescendingly dismissing a whole bunch of people. So I think one of the things that I'm planning on doing differently is trying to be more of a facilitator than someone who's maybe generating more strong opinion about something. I think that's what I want to do differently this time, because not everyone has the same amount of exposure to politics. That is a fact. I have met people since coming here whose greatest critique of Biden and the greatest thing that they like about the reason they like Trump so much is because gas was cheap. And that they don't talk about anything else. Like, gas was cheaper under Trump. Certain people think in such a two-dimensional way that you can't really blame them for, you know, their support to certain degrees, because they don't think about it too critically. They don't spend a lot of time to learn about what's happening, to learn about like what's really happening to our government, to our democracy. All they care about is gas. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking about someone who only cares about gas, mathematically, it makes sense. Trump was better if that's all you care about. So the job for people like me and people who want to bring about political discourse is to get someone who only cares about gas to care about a lot more. They have to care about democracy. They have to care about corruption. They have to care about a lot more things.
Yeah. I think delivery and tone go a long way in terms of, you know, creating safe places or safe spaces. And I know I've been guilty of this myself, where I look back to occasional social media posts or stories or, you know, whatever that I made around a specific topic. And I'm like, okay, I could have probably phrased that differently, you know, or whatever. And I know from my experience of just observing, there's this one fitness influencer that comes to mind that I follow. She's not Indian, but she's pretty vocal about a lot of social issues and other things going on. And I will say that even though I agree with her position, the delivery makes a difference. Like, when I see how her delivery is presented, there's a lot of anger in it. There's a lot of dismissiveness. And so it, like, if I try to put myself in the shoes of someone who's maybe on the other side of the spectrum, I can see how that could make them feel like, okay, this person that I'm following is not creating a safe place for me to be here and to like engage in right. like an actual conversation. You know what I mean?
I completely agree with that.
Someone asked, do you think Trump will run again? And if so, do you think he'll win? So we obviously know he announced his presidency, or his, he announced that he was going to run in a very lackluster, it was like a very anticlimactic kind of announcement. But do you think that he has a chance at winning? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first, let me just say, he ran on my birthday. It was on my birthday that he decided to run for office, which I thought was the funniest thing. And in terms of will he win, like, this is like the preeminent question that was asked in 2016 as well. And
yeah.
It led upset polls and opinions and TV broadcasts. So is he going to win again? I will say this. I recently talked to a friend of mine who is much more moderate. He's much more close to the Republican Party. And he's actually been involved in the real like US Congress space. He's interned there. And when I was getting his sense of things, the sense that I got from him, and the sense that I'm getting by doing my own online tentacling, like I like to have a tentacle in different online communities just to get a pulse on things, is that there is less excitement for him now from what I'm observing. Even the GOP as the establishment have experienced an incredible amount of losses over the years. Like Massachusetts, they had a Republican governorship for the longest time. And things are great. But basically, Trump endorsed somebody, and anybody that Trump endorses almost always wins the primary. So this is the key with the Trump endorsement. Whoever Trump endorses, they have an incredibly high chance to win any primary because they're the most extreme of candidates. But then when you get to the general election where a lot more people vote, people look at Trump's endorsement, they're like, maybe not them, we'll go for the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
So the GOP saw this happening across the country and they are pissed, honestly. They don't like that. So I think it's going to be the most interesting of battles, the GOP primary. I'm going to be so tuned in and I just can't wait. I'm really happy to be living during this time where I get to witness this. If Ron DeSantis runs, it's going to be too close to tell. Ron DeSantis is the current Florida governor. He swept the Florida elections. He completely dominated in every regard. If he wins the primary, I'm confident he'll win the presidency. But if Trump wins the primary, I don't think he'll win the presidency this time. But the question, will he win the primary? And I'm going to go ahead on record. I think he's going to win the primary first.
I think what we've seen in the last 6-7 years, literally anything can happen. I mean, the things that have happened in the world in the last couple of years, like, are things you'd only expect to see in the movies. So
I know. We get to
wild.
This is wild, but that's my guess. I think he's going to win the primary, and I think he's going to lose the general election. That's my prediction. Yeah.
I feel like there should be an age restriction, age cap for people running for the president, like a maximum age requirement. I mean, there's a minimum age requirement. You have to be 35 years old. But I just kind of feel like watching Trump and then Biden, it's very clear there's been some cognitive decline. Like, so if you watch Biden talk in an interview or with the press now, I mean, he really struggles. Like, I don't think he's that far off from the path of dementia or something like that. And those are, I'm not even saying that to be mean. Like, those are serious illnesses that happen to real people as they age. And I feel like that should be taken into account, you know, in terms of like, is this person mentally fit to have this super powerful and influential job? Even, you know, even Trump back in the day, if you watch his interviews from the 80s and 90s, like on late night shows, he used to be really charismatic. He was pretty articulate. He had a pretty decent vocabulary. He had a pretty like palatable personality. Like he was well-spoken. But when you watch him now, it's night and day. And I think both of them have experienced some kind of age-related, you know, decline, cognitive decline. And I think it's worth exploring, implementing some kind of like age cap for running for the presidency of the United States. If not an age cap, some kind of like mental, cognitive functioning test or something of that nature.
So I have a lot of things to say to that. The first is, I do have watched a lot of Trump's interviews from the past. Trump is an awesome interviewer. He used to be a great speaker. He's so fun. He's so charismatic. And watching some of his older speeches are amazing. Biden is so old. I don't understand. You know, he speaks nonsense. There's so many videos of him gaffing.
So many. Like, I'm going to try to see if I can find one and then insert it into the
podcast. You should watch the gaffes. But I think the biggest issue here, and I know you know this, is that the people who would be in charge of setting a cap of the age are the same people who are of that age. You know, the average age of Congress, you look at them, Senator Grassley, how many years was he in office for? Like 30? Something ridiculous like that. So these people are never going to pass legislation against their own interests. It's the same reason why we'll never see legislation that caps, you know, how many terms a congressperson can run. Because they're like, we worked so hard. We are one of two representatives in an entire state. Why on earth would I vote to limit my power?
Right.
So don't ever see that changing. But I totally agree. In literally any other industry, having a 70-year-old run as anything is seen as prosperous. You don't anywhere else. They're seen as, you know, you can't. And it's not a hate on like old people. I'm going to be that way one day. One day I'm not going to be competent enough to run things. So
I just looked it up. So Trump in 2024, he's going to be 78. Biden in 2024 is going to be 82. Like seriously, 80 plus. Like these people need to just chill out at home. They are like doing too much.
You're both ex-presidents. Go live the rest of your life. Stop running around a country. Like what's wrong with you people?
Right. Totally.
I don't want to see either one of them in the White House. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some of the cool things that have come from the Mulu Trump platform? Like, I remember you had hosted a huge Zoom happy hour. So, you know, tell us about some of the cool, like, connections and opportunities that have come to the platform.
It behooves me to show gratitude for the fact that I've made a lot of cool friends, like friends from this entire like silly little endeavor. What started off is that I, you know, through a whole wild series of events and, you know, creating like a mini like Zoom happy hour recurring community, I've made some friends, some who will definitely be by my side on my deathbed, on my wedding day. Like, I will see some of them for sure.
Wow.
On that note, shout out to Oisin Matthew, it's her birthday tomorrow. I don't know when this podcast is going to go, but her birthday's on January 19th. Happy birthday in advance.
Woo-hoo!
I hope you like the present that you're about to get. but yeah, I got to make a lot of good friends. That's the number one thing. And I think another thing is I got to make a video with Inverted Coconut, who is now like really, she's like an influencer now. She's like a million followers. She's doing so many cool things. So when I see her on my feed, I'm like, huh, I can't believe I made a video with her. We were chatting. We were just like having a good time.
That's dope. She's really cool. I remember like when I was in high school, I would see her videos and I just thought it was the wildest thing. I'm like, wow, white girl speaks Malayalam way better than me. Like,
yeah. I would say those are the two like big cool things. And I guess the overarching third cool thing is it's an interesting reaction that I see when somebody like recognizes maybe what I've done. I can't deny that it feels good. You know, it's nice to receive a compliment. Like, hey, it's a funny video. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that.
Have you ever considered doing comedy, like stand-up comedy? I think you'd be really good at it.
Man, that's one of the things that I plan on doing once I like, not at this point in my life. I definitely just, I don't know. I appreciate that, but no, I think I'm too nervous. I would be way too nervous to do that. I would be way too nervous. Oh my goodness. Because if I'm on stage and someone doesn't laugh at a joke that I thought was funny, I would break.
I'd be like, no, wait, I laugh. Laugh with me. That was the point. Thank you.
Yeah, so
I don't think that would happen. And you're really funny. And if you ever did pursue that, like, you would have a huge support crew. The Mulu Trump groupies. Okay, let's pivot a little. So yeah. I know you said you're open to talking about dating, and we love talking about dating on this pod. We like to be very nosy. So how do you think having this platform has impacted your dating life, if it has at all? If it has at all, like, do people recognize you as Mulu Trump on dating apps? Like, what has that been like?
So very few people have recognized me on dating apps as Mulu Trump. Very few. I cannot stress how few people, less than five people, like, you know, something this have recognized me as Mulu Trump. And the reactions have always been weird. If I'm to be honest, some of the reactions, you know, they're like, oh my God, you're Mulu Trump, you know, there's a really excitable moment. And then like, what do we do from here? You just created this weird, like little, it's like, they no longer see me as a Mad George, they see me as this dude. So that changes that dynamic instantly. And then there was this one time, this girl, she's like, hey, like, I recognize you. Like, are you're Mulu Trump? I'm like, yeah. And she goes, okay, well, I'm not going to gas you up or anything, okay? Like, to me, you're just a regular guy. And she said in a stern, really weird way, as if to just, like, humble me. But I wasn't trying to do anything, I've never brought it up to a person that, hey, like, I do this. If they recognize,
right. So it's not like something you're parading on your app profile or anything like that. Okay. On the apps, you're Matt George, the guy who works in crypto and lives in Dallas, Texas. Yes, okay.
That's me. So I have never paraded this in my life. So people recognize me. I have so many instances since moving to Dallas. A lot of people, they're like, I've seen you from somewhere. Where are you from? And then I don't say anything because I don't want to, like, you know, I can never tell how people are going to react. But yeah, so it hasn't affected my dating life in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. I don't recall. No, I don't think it's affected my dating life.
What have your overall dating and relationship experiences been like so far in your 20s? So I think you're 28, right?
Yeah.
Did you just turn 29 or you're 28 now?
Just turned 28.
Okay. What has been your overall dating experience has been like in your 20s? Like, have you had an positive experience? Have you found it very exhausting and draining?
That's a great question. And it's actually been quite an interesting journey for myself. So I think in my early 20s, I was very, very much of the perspective that I have a soulmate. I have a soulmate out there and it is on me. It is incumbent on me to, like, find her. So in my early 20s, I was very much about the numbers game. So, you know, this is my marketing brain thinking that early. And I was like, Matt, you will see a certain number of people on a dating app. You will swipe right on a percentage of that. Of people swipe right, a percentage of that will match with you. Of the percentage of the match with you, you'll talk to some will reply. You'll like them. You'll go on a date. You'll find, like, I was a little insane.
Super methodological about it.
I was very methodological about that. And I was very, a little naive. So I ended up dating a girl who lived in Singapore, one of the furthest places from the U.S. by flight. And, you know, I dated her for almost 2 years. And in that time, I've seen her six times. Because in that time, I had convinced myself, Matt, like, if it works out, it doesn't matter where the person is. Distance doesn't make a difference. This is how soulmates work. And then, you know, once I reached my mid-20s, I changed my mindset. I started becoming very checkbox-oriented. Mm. Ridiculous checkbox-oriented to the point where I created a list of maybe 16, 17 DBQs, what I call deal breaker questions. And before even engaging in any sort of conversation with a girl, I would want her to answer this to know if she's even worth my time. Because, you know, it's like the early 20s was more about, like, hey, I like you. That's all I know. I want to get to know you more. Mid-20s, like, hey, before I even decide if I'm going to like you or not, I need to know that you match certain requirements that I have in life. Here are some deal breaker questions. And some girls entertained that and, like, actually, like, took the time to, like, answer some of those questions for me. And now I'm at a crossroads where I'm trying to figure out, like, what the best way is to actually do that. I think it's a happy medium in between. I don't think it's, you know, you can't just go blindfully and do something, and you can't give somebody a spreadsheet and have them answer a bunch of questions either. Makes me sound like a robot, but I've tried, and I'm at a point where I'm trying to figure out what that balance is.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I think, like, naturally weaving your deal breaker questions or those topics into conversations. Like, you don't want to make someone feel like they're sitting in a job interview and the next thing you're going to ask them is their social security number. You know what I mean?
Totally agree. And I've heard the feedback and I understand now that is probably not the right.
Oh, so what are some of your deal breakers today?
Some of my deal breakers today. So I'm trying, see, I just told you, I'm trying to get out of the mentality of deal breaker. And here you are, Julie, pulling me right back in.
I have some deal breakers.
Yeah, no, of course. I have some deal breakers. And I think one of the deal breakers that I have is I will never date somebody who has been unfaithful in a relationship, no matter what. That is a hard no for me because I know my life throughout up until this point. And at any point in my life, I've always known that infidelity is a hard no. Like, I've never considered it. So the idea of being with a partner who at one point did that, and if they were of rational mind at the time, then that is a huge red flag for me. And I just will never, ever take that risk, ever. So that is something that I definitely have a deal breaker with.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the way I phrase it, like, in conversation, I don't really show that I have a hardline stance because I want them to, like, be honest about that.
Right.
I think on at least one occasion someone has revealed to me that they did. And mm-hmm. that That's one of my deal breakers, for sure.
Got it. Are you on the dating apps? And if so, which dating apps are you on?
So I'm actually not on the dating apps right now. I'm really busy for the next couple of months. And I realize that I don't have time. So I'm not on dating apps right now because I literally would not have time to talk to anybody. So for the next, I think, 3 months, I am going to be just working away at stuff.
Okay.
But when I do have dating apps, it's going to be Hinge and Bill Mill.
Yeah.
And Coffee Meets Bagel.
I feel like, from what I remember, Coffee Meets Bagel, the user interface is so clunky. Like, it's clunky to use. Like, I like the concept of it, but I'm like, this app just needs a better UX designer person.
I'm trying to remember Coffee Meets. It's the one, they give you beans and you can use your beans to redeem a person or send a like on a person. Yes. Coffee Meets Bagel was definitely clunky.
Yeah.
I remember Coffee Meets Bagel to not be very active. I don't know. I feel like people weren't super active on that. But Hinge move. Like, everyone is active on Hinge. People.
For sure.
You know, they're responsive. Prompts are great. You can add voice notes.
Yes. I've had the most positive experience using Hinge. Just the prompts, the overall user experience was just much better. From your perspective, what do you think has been the most challenging part about dating? I mean, maybe you already shared it, but is there anything else that you think is extremely challenging about dating in today's world?
Generally, I think one of the big issues with dating is, ironically, with the fact that people have so many options.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, no guy has talked to hundreds of different girls. That has never happened. But nowadays, I have a phone. I have talked to, like, the amount of exposure that you get, there is a downside to it. It's like with the news. Yes, you have all the news in the world, but there's a downside to that. There has to be a downside to that. So I think a lot of people have been spoiled by that. Mm-hmm. I think it's created a really weird culture of, oh, I can do better. I think it just messes with people, because this was not the case just a few decades ago. Like, this was absolutely not the case.
For sure.
Thinking about that, I'm like, how do I reconcile that difference? Like, the average person back in the day did not talk to hundreds of different girls before they found their one. They talked to a handful, they picked one, and then they're becoming their wife, which leads me to conclude that healthy relationships are a lot more about just having the will to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I think that just the sheer array of choice today, it makes dating almost like you have to really treat dating like a job, honestly. And I don't think people are meeting others, like significant others, as organically as they used to. Like 15 years ago, people were meeting each other just based on proximity, right? You're going to work, you're going to happy hours, you're just meeting on the street. And like, the world is just so different now. And so I think dating just takes a lot more intentional, persistent effort to meet the right person.
Yeah. There's a part of me that wishes I was born during a time where dating apps didn't exist. Because I think that the interactions of meeting someone in real life and building a relationship out of that, there's something a lot more beautiful about that than there is about swiping right on the same screen that I'm using to watch a YouTube video about giraffes fighting. So yeah, I agree with that.
Do you feel a lot of pressure right now, being 28, to, you know, settle into a committed relationship and marriage? Like, do you get that pressure from your family or external communities?
So my family's don't pressure me, but I will tell you this. Since moving to Dallas, I have noticed that maybe 80% of the people that I'm meeting are in committed relationships, are engaged, or are married.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are meeting are just in that, you know, this is a new phase of life that I've reached. I've entered a phase of life that I wasn't entirely qualified for, because I'm always still single. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating to me. Like, everyone is married or engaged around here. It's not the same as when I was in New York at all. I'm starting to feel a little bit of the pressure. I started feeling it last year a little bit, and I just turned 28, and I'm feeling it a little bit, but it's not too bad. I'm okay. I think I'll feel it when I hit 30, if I'm still single back then. But at 28, I'm still okay.
Okay.
Yeah. My family's not pressuring me. So.
What's up? Say that one more time.
Family's not pressuring me, so like, I'm fine.
Yeah, that's good. So if there's a special someone who's listening and they want to get to know you, Are you open to a connection? Edit this part out.
No, I'm just looking at your face. I'm like, what is she about to say? Is she about to ask me for like money? Like, what is this? Not expecting that. Sure.
Okay. So if anyone's listening, hit me up. I'll make that connection. Okay. So you mentioned you have a younger brother, and I forgot to ask you this at the beginning. How many siblings do you have?
I have three brothers. I have one older and two younger.
Okay. So there's four siblings altogether.
Yeah. So that's another reason why I don't feel the pressure, because all of my relatives and my parents, like, they're pressuring my older brother. So okay. All eyes are off of me.
Yeah. You've got time in their eyes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
In their eyes. Oh, yeah. One older and two younger brothers.
Cool. So we are just at the hour mark. Let's see. I know you mentioned you're going to be really busy in the next 3 months, but what is, you know, the content pipeline like? Are you going to be putting out videos pretty soon, or what can people expect from the Malu Trump content platform?
So in terms of Trump content, so I don't see him doing a lot of things that are just worthy of making a video. Like, in my eyes, there's just not, he's not in the news as much. Ever since he was deplatformed, like, I feel like all eyes are off of him, or a lot of eyes are off of him. So my formula for making a video is, did he create content that is talk worthy? If it's popular, the second question is that information, did it propagate within the Malayali community?
Mm-hmm. So
he made a whole announcement about NFTs, which I thought was hysterical. I'm in the industry. I loved it. I was so close to buying like a Superman suit, just like mess around and just to create a video. But I'm like, not a lot of Malayalis, I don't think, have followed the NFT story. So it was,
yeah, would have resonate with them. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay.
So I'm looking for very careful stories that I know the Malayalis will listen to.
Got it.
Yeah. And I'm so, I'm like pretty disorganized as a person. So I do things on a whim. Like, I will wake up when I'm looking, I should make a video today and I'll just do it. So we'll see. We'll see how he enters the news over the next couple of weeks.
For sure. Okay, cool. Well, okay, listeners. So obviously, if you want to connect with Matt, they can hit you up at Malu Trump on the gram. We'll link that in the show notes. This was a super fun conversation. I think I might try to pull this up and release it a little earlier than I was originally planning for.
All right.
But thanks for coming on the Brown Girl Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Julie.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.